This is an encore presentation of the Catholic Cave.
For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way towards salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. Or in the words of Paul, at present we see indistinctly, as in a mirror, but then face to face. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave.
Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, the two most intellectual cavemen you're ever going to deal with, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell and Mr. Mark Tuttle. Guys, we are now into Lent. There's that classic question, what did you give up for Lent? Now, have you ever noticed that there are two particular times when people start diets? Number one is January 1st, mm-hmm. and number two is Ash Wednesday. Is Lent a time when we focus on a diet? Or, you know, if we look at, I'm giving up fried foods for Lent, and, you know,
the best thing to do is draw attention to yourself when you do it.
And because that's what Jesus
says. Make a show
says.
Of it. Right. Yeah, make a show of it. Well, you know,
I'm
Looks
giving
like
up,
early suffering.
Yeah, I'm giving up fried food for Lent, and I hope to lose 5 pounds. Is that really where we want to go with Lent?
Certainly, you know, if you fast and you fast rigorously, you're going to lose some weight. I mean, it does kind of go hand in hand. Yeah. So you might as well kill two birds with one stone, right?
Right. So what did you give up, Mark?
You know, our whole household gave up television for Lent.
That's ambitious.
Yeah, and aside from the binge watching Stranger Things to make sure I got through the whole Netflix season before Ash Wednesday.
That's like your Fat Tuesday,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Binge watching television. Yeah. So aside from that, no, it's been remarkable because I've got 5 little girls.
Yeah.
And you know, in the evenings they'd constantly be asking, "Can we watch TV?" Well, now they know the answer to that's gonna be no.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they've been pulling out the games, then playing games together.
They've been
doing make-believe and a whole bunch of other creative stuff.
Actually using their imagination.
Exactly. So, yeah, it has been a very good thing. But, you know, that does kind of go along the same lines, I think, of dieting during Lent, you know, where, yeah, we're seeing the benefits, but the benefits are more, you know, kind of social and interfamilial, not necessarily spiritual benefits. Although I guess those will follow eventually.
Yeah, I would think so. Kent, what about you? What'd you give up for Lent?
Well, I actually didn't give up anything except for, you know, an extra hour or so of my time each week. I've decided to go to one extra Mass per
week.
Good
for you. Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things. I looked at that, and I've been looking at Lent differently for years now, and the fact that everybody says, oh, what are you giving up for Lent? And it seems like everything that people give up for Lent is for their own benefit. And I looked at it several years ago and started, okay, what can I do for someone else? Yes, going to Mass one extra day a week benefits me, but it also gives me a chance to pray for others in a way that I hadn't been in, you know, normal time.
Ooh, that's admirable. Very admirable.
Yeah. And that ties in, I think, to the church's tradition of fasting during Lent, that, you know, the fast is supposed to be a communal fast that we're all doing as the church together. And so, you know, taking that extra time to pray for other people and, you know, do that. And it kind of brings that communal nature of the fast. It's not supposed to be our own idiosyncratic, you know, whatever each of us are individually giving up. I mean, this is something that we're supposed to be doing as church, you know, universally.
Yeah, and for me, this Lent, I gave up myself. I gave up myself, and the way I've chosen to do that.
Okay, Sart.
About the time I get out of Mass on Sundays, the program airs. The Catholic Cave is on the radio.
Oh, I
listen to myself. And so now I just gave myself up. I won't listen to myself.
Right. Well,
no, I'm kidding. That's not all. I give up ice cream, which was That's, oh boy, I like ice cream. That's
yeah, ice cream's a tough one. Yeah. Anything in the sweets arena, I really struggle with giving up for Lent. And we did do that too as a household. So we got television and dessert that we gave up.
Oh, you're gonna have a rebellion on your hands.
But it's funny now that we've given up dessert, because we didn't say we gave up sweets, we gave up dessert. Now the kids are suggesting meals like, can we have chicken and waffles with maple syrup?
Right. Grim pancakes.
Right. Yeah.
That doesn't work. Around my house, syrup is a beverage.
Yummy. Yes. Yep. I love real maple syrup too. You can tell the difference. I mean, Aunt Jemima and some of those are really good. Log Cabin, those are really good. Right. But if you get the actual real deal stuff, you can tell the difference too.
Well, we've all heard, you know, from homilies and readings and things, you know, the spiritual benefits of fasting and sort of the spiritual reasons that, you know, fasting is a part of the churches. But I want to let's spend this show, Tim, talking a little bit about the idea of self-denial. You know, what is it to deny yourself? And I guess to do that, we have to go back and deny yourself that you're denying for Lent. define that and draw that out.
I gave myself up.
Yep.
Which is not the same as giving up on yourself.
Good one.
Or giving yourself up to the law either.
That's true. Surrender.
Right. So we do have to talk a little bit about self, what constitutes self, and what, when we're denying ourselves, what exactly are we denying? And more importantly, why? Why is self-denial an important, and I guess an important part of cleansing, an important part of sort of an annual ritual of, to a certain extent, getting closer to God? Because it's not just Catholicism that does this. You know, we're not the only religion that fasts. I mean, you have Ramadan in Islam, you have, Jewish fasts and things. So fasting is, there's a part of human nature, I think, that leads us towards fasting periodically. And so, you know, I think we should spend a show, kind of figuring out what fasting is, what self-denial is, and why this is beneficial.
All right, let's jump right in. Well, maybe a place to start, Mark, would be just a quick review of kind of the Catholic understanding of the human person, right? That the human person is made in the image and likeness of God. The human person is both body and soul. We have a rational soul, so we're capable, that's immortal. And of course, we have a physical body that's a biological organism, right? So we're sort of we're ensouled creatures,
right? You know, and you bring up the image and likeness of God, and that concept within Christianity, and within Catholicism, and even more pronounced within Eastern Orthodoxy. So our Eastern brothers and sisters, and Byzantine Rite Catholicism, they make a distinction between the image of God and the likeness of God. And I think this has a lot to do with self-denial and why we deny ourselves during periods like Lent. When we're made in the image of God, we're that mirror image of...
Or icon.
Yeah, right, exactly. That mirror Greek, image or icon in Greek, but that we're a reflection of God's nature. And to a certain extent, we're a manifestation of God's nature. But the likeness of God is not something that we now have. That's something that we lose over time. And so getting that likeness of God back to its original state is part of the goal of Christianity.
Is that deification?
Well, it is deification, but it's also it's also sanctification. It's okay. Getting rid of that sinfulness within us.
Gotcha.
It's that overcoming our sinful nature, overcoming original sin. I mean, that's part of the whole Catholic teaching tradition. Like I said, it's more pronounced in the East, but it's certainly part of our Catholic tradition as well.
Right. So we want to grow in holiness, grow in virtue. And in order to do that, the human person also we have certain capacities, right? Capacities for reason or rationality, meaning we can truly grow in what? Knowledge and understanding. We have an intellect, right? We're capable of cognition, abstract thinking. And obviously we have memory. This is maybe where we'll spend a little time is, we also have a will, right? A will. And a will is what, it's also something referred to as sort of desires, or in philosophy, we like to use the word appetites or passion. There's different passions, right? And so an appetite, which we commonly today, just in common language, we use appetite to refer to the desire for food, right? I have an appetite, right? But if you go back and you study the philosophical tradition, which is the Catholic one, you're going to see philosophers are really even pre-Catholic, right? So Aristotle, we'll talk about the appetites, in other words, our desires for certain things.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you know, Plato, even before Aristotle, you know, you go to the Republic and you've got that tripartite soul, and that, you know, that appetite part is, you know, and in his vision, you know, that's one third of us,
right,
is our our appetites and our desires there. So, you know, and it's interesting if you move into Christian philosophy just a little bit in St. Augustine takes those same three parts of the intellect, right? The intellect, the will, and the memory that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And he uses that as an image of the Trinity. So when we're talking about the image of God, that is what our image is. And, you know, granted, it's not to say that God is made up exclusively of will, intellect, and memory. And it's not that there's a, you know, reference back to the Trinity that way. But that tripartite image is an image of the Trinity. And just like the Trinity, the three are kind of one. So everything that's within your intellect, you had to desire to know. And everything that you remember, you know, it's an act of the will to bring it up to remember. And there's nothing that we can remember that isn't something we first learned. So the content of all three of those, the intellect, the memory, and the will, are all one and the same. But when you start talking about self-denial, you're talking about trying to tame the will. You're very right to kind of key in on the will as that aspect of self-denial. So what is it that's so troublesome about that will that we kind of have to tame?
Well, I would say we should take that up right after our break.
I don't want to.
I don't. Exactly. See, that's where we got to tame the will.
Okay, so we have to take a break. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. I've got the
spirit. Hi, this is Teresa Tomeo from Catholic Connection.
Hi, this is Barbara McWiggin, host of The Good Fight here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray Guarenti, host of The Doctor Is In Here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta, and you can join me for Cresta in the Afternoon here on Catholic Radio Indy.
The best of EWTN plus great local programming. That's what you get when you support Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you been married and have since divorced? Do you think your marital status prevents you from coming to church? Most Catholics and non-Catholics unfortunately have a lot of misconceptions about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Pope Francis has recently encouraged all people with questions about marriage to make an appointment and talk with their parish priest. As Catholic priests, we look forward to the opportunity to help you on your journey through life. Please make an appointment to speak with a priest today. We are and will always be here for you.
This is an encore presentation of The Catholic Cave.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm Timothy O'Donnell in the cave with me still, our co-host Mark Tuttle and our trusty sidekick and producer Kent Blanford. Hey, we're talking about Lent. We're talking about self-denial. And we're trying to get a handle on a little bit of the human person. And, you know, one of the great Catholic traditions during Lent is to give something up, right? And so to engage in what? A kind of self-sacrifice, right? So we were talking a little bit before the break about will, desire, appetites. And I think this is a good time, Mark, for us to maybe begin to make some important distinctions, which is what we like to do in philosophy. So when we think about our desire, we have human beings have desire. We all have those experiences, but we have desires in different ways. We have intellectual desires. As you mentioned before the break, we want to know things, right? In fact, Aristotle, you know, begins his book on the soul with all men by nature desire to know, right? So we want to know everyone, and that's a feature of being a person. We want to know about, and we want to know about different things. Sometimes we want to know about sports. We want to know about philosophy. That's why we're listening to Catholic Cave. We want to know about the faith. We want to know about other people. We want to know things. But then we also have these appetites, right? For we're also bodily creatures. So we're going to have certain needs that go along with that. And we have desires, we have appetites, and we have will.
Right.
And what we want to do is we want to ensure that our intellect is governing our will. Because the danger is that we, and St. Paul brings this up beautifully, right? He says that, you know, we want things that really aren't good for us. And then we don't want things that really are good for us. And so he puts it in that, you know, there's the good that I ought to do that I don't. And there are things I should avoid, but I do anyway.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, you go back to the Christian tradition a little bit more, and, you know, that desire to know that Aristotle talks about, Christianity specifies that a little bit more, that our desire to know is to know and love God. And so, you know, our focus of what we want to know and where we want to know, ultimately, the best thing to know is God. And, of course, we believe that, you know, all of creation points back to God. So, you know, we've talked about science on this show before. We've talked about other, you know, modes of learning and disciplines and all of that. All of those lead back towards a knowledge of God that allows us to love, serve, and know God in this life and the next.
Yeah, and I think one of the problems that we face or have to contend with when it comes to this these issues of the appetite, desire, will is that human beings are fallen, right? And so we suffer from what's called concupiscence, meaning that everything else being equal, we tend towards sin.
Right.
So because of the effects of original sin, actual sin, what do we have? Well, we have where our intellects are darkened and our wills are weak. In other words, intellect being darkened, meaning that we don't know all that we ought to know or understand everything that we ought to understand. And then also our wills are weak, right? And we all know that because guess what? As we mentioned, I gave up ice cream for Lent. I still really want ice cream.
Right.
And I'm tempted to break my promise not to eat ice cream during Lent. And so if I give in, it's because I gave into my desire, right? My will wasn't strong enough to follow through on the promise that I made.
Right. Well, that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, what do we call somebody that's insistent on getting their own way above everything else? We call that person strong-willed, right?
Yes.
So if somebody's strong-willed, they're constantly desiring their own objects and their own desires in the face of everything else. So, you know, there's kind of two ways to err on that. And on the one hand, you can have a weak will, and you can just, you know, well, I really, really desire to do the right thing.
But yeah,
I succumb to the temptation, and so I've got a weak will. Or you can err by having a strong will, and it's not so much I really, really desire to do the right thing and I'm just not strong enough to do it. I really, really desire to do the wrong thing.
Right.
and I'm convinced that the wrong thing is the right thing to do. And so there's kind of two ways that our will errs. And self-denial, in a lot of ways, there's a twofold process of trying to correct the ways that it errs.
Well, and I think one of the things we've lost in our contemporary setting, Mark, is all throughout the tradition, you know, Catholic theologians have been very untrustworthy of our passions or desires. In other words, they've always been very cautious about the human person following those desires, knowing that we're sinful creatures and that our propensity is towards sin. And so this disciplining of our passions or our desires today, it's, you know, it sounds, you know, we, in fact, a lot of our talk is around, you know, I want you to have real passion for that. You know, that person we say it in a very positive way. Oh, that he's meaning like, oh, you're very enthusiastic. Well, I would think if you go back to, say, the fathers of the church and others, Aquinas, others, they'd say, well, if you were to be called, you know, someone has a lot of passion, that's really may not be a compliment. That might be suggesting that you give in inappropriately to unseemly desires.
Right. You know, St. Thomas a Kempis, his Imitation of Christ, you know, that's a
great
standard
book.
Yeah, and a standard Lenten reading. But it's very much that view that you just said of, you know, very suspect of the idea of the passions, very suspect of the idea of desires. But on the flip side, you know, St. John Paul II with his Theology of the Body, when you read that, he's not quite so suspect of the passions and the desires. As a matter of fact, he kind of turns them and says that this is really what drives us as human beings towards God.
Yes, yes. When they're directed and disciplined, though. And he was a man, too. And I agree that there's a very interesting difference when you read Thomas A. Kempis and St. John Paul the Great as it pertains to desires. But St. John Paul the Great, though, also, he was a man of great discipline, though, right? I mean, there's lots of accurate tales of him, you know, sleeping on the floor, doing penances and those sorts of things to continue to discipline himself. So we wanted to talk about this idea of giving up something for Lent. And I think what it connects to me, it connects to a few different things. When we give something up that we would otherwise desire or enjoy, it begins to do, I think, a few things for us. One is it begins to give us discipline over ourselves, a kind of self-mastery. Right. One of the traps as a human being we can fall into is that we become what's called a slave to our passions. In other words, and we've met people like this, or we may have acted this way ourselves. And you can actually see it in younger children sometimes who are, say, spoiled. And that is that they, whatever pops in their head, whatever they want, that's what they got to have. And nothing else will satisfy.
Right.
And they kind of go crazy if they don't get it. And so, and that's someone who's what? Who's sort of, I would say, inverted the primacy of place really should belong to our intellect, where our intellect, our reason governs and appropriately presents objects worthy of our will's desire.
Right. And, you know, somebody that's like that, that's constantly chasing after every appetite and every desire, we describe that person as, well they're like an animal.
You know,
And it's very true that, you know, that's part of our sort of animal nature, our animalistic nature as human beings, of wanting those things and desiring those things and going after those things, even in the face of what reason would dictate as good or bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think of the story. I grew up with dogs. I have dogs, so you know, I think of the one time I had a professor kind of put it to me this way and say, okay, let's imagine you've got a room, and in this room you put on the floor a plate with say five different steaks on it, and you bring your dog into the room on a leash, and you let your dog off the leash. What do they do? Well, they're going to go to the closest plate with the steak on it, and they're going to start eating it, and their goal or desire is going to eat as many of those steaks as they can possibly, even to the point of throwing up, right? But they're not sitting there weighing, hey, is this going to make me fat? Is this going to, you know, does this...
Right, yeah.
They're not making any of those calculations,
they
right?
They don't have a sense of what's good for them or what's not good for them.
Correct. They simply have the basic instinct and desire for food, and then they simply succumb to it, right?
Right.
Now, through training, they can be taught to what? Sit and stay.
Right, to delay those appetites. But those appetites are still there, and those appetites in the dog, anybody that's trained a dog knows that, those appetites are still dominant.
Right, and they don't, they can't be redirected, right?
Right.
They really can't be redirected. So in human beings, when we think about, giving up things, for making that sacrifice for Lent, prayer, fasting, almsgiving. So when we're fasting, we're engaging in self-mastery, self-discipline. We're also engaging in a kind of obedience, right? To Christ's command. But we're also reorienting ourselves towards the good, the true, and the beautiful, right?
Exactly. And, you know, that goes back to those two different ways that we can err with our will. On the one hand, yeah, we can have a will that's not strong enough, you know, to override those appetites and desires. And so we let those appetites and desires sort of run roughshod over what we know is the good thing to do. On the other hand, we can also have a wrong conception of where we ought to go. You know,
so we
can be pointed at wrong objects and desire those.
That happens all the time, I think.
Right, exactly. And so part of the idea of fasting is, as you said, redirecting us and redirecting our intellect to what's truly good for us, which is obedience to God.
Right. And through that, through the fasting, we begin to what? Sort of conquer ourselves, right? I've been reading this. It started a little bit before Lent, but there is a really great devotional that I would highly recommend. It's by a priest named Father William Doyle, and he went by Father Willie.
I'm guessing he's Polish.
Right, exactly. Slovakian, actually. Right. No. So he's this very holy, he was a Jesuit priest from Ireland, and he was a chaplain during World War One and was killed during World War One. And on some other EWTN program, I think it was Celtic Connection is where I first heard about him. Well, you can get online and at your local Catholic bookstore, want to promote them. They have a great collection of just, you know, brief daily readings from letters and things that he wrote. And where I'm at right now is he has written out short little meditations for the Stations of the Cross. And one thing that really has struck me and I think ties into what our topic today is that he's always in his writings and on these Stations of the Cross, he's always referring back to the crucified Christ. He's always referring back to our Lord as the man of sorrows and how important it is that we engage throughout the days of these acts of self-denial, these little acts of humility that further unite us to Christ and his passion. Hey, so with that, it's time we take a break. You're listening to The Catholic Cave. Stay tuned and we'll be right back. We're talking about fasting.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest, or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford in the cave with me, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell, Mr. Mark Tuttle. Gentlemen, we've been talking about passions, about desires, about those types of things. Much of that is seen in general society today as simply nothing more than our animal instincts. Are we as humans completely subject to those, or can our will separate us from those instinctive desires and take us above? Is there such a thing as human exceptionalism?
You know, I think you bring up a good question, especially regarding fasting. You know, we're talking about fasting, we're talking about self-denial, and obviously as Catholics, we're looking at this as a good thing. You know, this is something that we ought to be doing. We set aside 40 days for it, for fasting. But you're right, the rest of the secular world, to a certain extent, looks a little askance at the idea of fasting. I mean, this is self-denial, and to a certain extent, I think it's viewed as, well, what you Catholics do is inhumane.
Well, I think so much of American society now, and maybe even more broadly, Western civilization right now, society is really we continue to organize ourselves on a very broad level around maximizing choice, right? And what's choice? It's kind of a euphemism for give people as much maximize the space and provide resources so that people can do what they want.
Right, yeah.
Right? It's that radical autonomy, right?
And it's hedonism. I mean, it's a rebirth of the phil. And hedonism, I mean, we use it as a derogatory term now of just somebody that automatically gives into their senses.
But maximize pleasure, right, minimize pain.
Right,
is
exactly.
The sum total of what we're after.
But, you know, hedonism has a long, venerable tradition within philosophy, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Yeah, it does have a... It comes up... Well, because I think it's because it's natural. We people, by nature, enjoy pleasure, and by nature, we shun pain and suffering is what kind of are the natural kind of experiences that we have to those things. So you could see how it can surface as a system. But Kent, getting back to your point, I mean, that's a stark contrast, and I'm glad you brought that up, because again, if we let's talk about evolution for a sec, just at least macroevolution and its general trajectory and its implications. So, for example, if human beings are merely the result of random chance and adaptation, mutation, survival of the fittest over a long span of time, hundreds of thousands of years or millions of years, something, however long, whatever timeline you want to affix to that, then it would seem that we are, that where our desires, our appetites, what we want is fitting to try to satisfy them and not govern them. Why? Because it's the product of evolution. We've made the most progress thus far for the kind of things that we are. So there's really not a wrong, there really shouldn't apply categories of right and wrong. You wouldn't say that a dog is wrong for wanting to eat a steak, right? It's simply where they're doing what they do. And so that's why I think you're pointing out, Mark, that the as Catholics, it's very countercultural to do things like fast and pray.
Right. I think if you radically buy into the notion of, everything comes from chaos, everything's headed back to chaos, there is no real order, only apparent order, everything's right. Kind of random and we exist by random chance. And not only that, then we're governed, our trajectory is governed to a certain extent by evolution. Then you see what is good for humanity is simply reproducing ourselves. The good that we're directed towards
we're not doing such a great job at it, like in birth rates.
Right.
That we've decided not to do anymore.
and I mean, that's a pretty, when you sit down and you look at it, that's a pretty low bar for success for a successful human being.
Well, I mean, think of it. Think of the implications of a strict macroevolutionary tale for the history of humanity. It would really mean at bottom, Mark, I think this is true. At rock bottom, the implication would be that the periodic table is what we are.
Right. Yeah.
We are and it fully accounts for everything in the universe is the periodic table, because at bottom we're a collection of atoms.
A collection of carbon. We're just kind of big lumps of carbon, right?
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah, watery carbon.
Right. But even more to the point though, I think then, what is the purpose of human life? What are we supposed to be doing with our time?
None of that matters.
From a
macroevolutionary, other than to advance it. But this is where something very dangerous has come up, right? Not to take too far afield from today's show, but this is where things like eugenics rear its ugly head, because if our project is to continue the we're on an evolutionary track, there are no other tracks, so if we're on that track, then to cooperate and accelerate the evolutionary process by enabling or advantaging the most fit,
right,
and then disabling or disadvantaging or eliminating the unfit simply is a cooperation with natural forces or nature itself.
Right. And that goes back to that same hedonistic calculus that, there what you're trying to do is you're trying to help nature alleviate the bad, the ill, the painful and the unpleasant, and accentuate the positive, the pleasant, the good, the things that we kind of value evolutionarily. So, you've got that same sort of drive to, I guess hedonism there to a certain extent built within that.
Yeah, I think there's hedonism plays an important role as an organizing philosophical principle. I also think that another one that we run into as we go down this particular path is utilitarianism, or in its close sister, consequentialism, meaning that by utilitarianism, it's the greatest good or greatest amount of happiness for the greatest number of people. Consequentialism, very similar in that it's focused on, or the primary focus is really around the outcomes or consequences of one's actions are producing the desirable consequences. And so once we have those kind of philosophical systems in place, maybe even together, hedonism and say utilitarianism, well, they become close bedfellows to evolution.
Right. And what you have is a very competing ethic that competes with the traditional Christian, Judeo-Christian ethic that's out there, because you have totally different goals and totally different aims as far as the purpose of life.
Yeah, and it would seem that as America becomes in some ways less religious, right? We've looked at some of those statistics on previous shows. There's good reason, I think, to be alarmed about the next generation coming up and how religious or non-religious they may be. It seems that there's a great falling away of the faith. And so not just the Catholic faith, but all of your traditional, right? There, people are spiritual but not religious. This has vast implications for our society, right, and for our culture, because culture is king.
Right. So to a certain extent, when we're talking about fasting, you know, one of the things that comes out of fasting is we're pushing back against, as Catholics, we're pushing back against this sort of cultural tide of, well, if it feels good, let's do it. By fasting and denying yourself, you're pushing back against that, and you're kind of setting yourself up as a law of contradiction against the prevalent society.
That's a great way to put it. Well, yes, and it's a way in which we as Catholics can be those models of people who are at least striving to grow in sanctity, to grow in holiness, to grow in virtue, in a society that increasingly shuns those ideas or doesn't even know what do you mean by virtue, or what, you know, is it important to be virtuous? I think a lot of people would struggle with even defining what virtue is, much less giving you even a common list of say the cardinal virtues, how they might operate or be important in one's lives or the lives of others or society. And so this is the setting, going back to who? McIntyre, right? After virtue. So bring him up again, where we've got these compete, as you mentioned, they're very much competing systems out there, philosophical systems. And as Catholics, we're up against systems that really have little understanding of what our terminology is, our concepts are, and what our principles are. And it's never more evident to me of that than when you watch a mainstream media outlet. I know you're not watching TV right now for Lent, but turn on one of the major channels and watch the reporting that they do on religion. If something comes up from the Vatican or something like that, and you have one of the major networks covering it, it's horrible.
Right.
They don't even know what they have. No idea what they're talking about. They have no idea what these terms are. And then they often will try to, and they kind of know it too. So they'll bring on an expert, you know, who unfortunately a lot of times are dissenters.
Right. Yeah.
They give it even more cloudy.
Exactly. They handpick their experts to be able to back up their own prejudices and their own viewpoints.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And it's even worse in print media. You know, if you start to read articles from New York Times or Washington Post or any of those, you quickly start to see that. Why would you hire somebody to write on a subject you know nothing about?
It's amazing. Well, thank goodness we have Catholic Radio.
Exactly, and other outlets, National Catholic Register, and you know,
some
good print media out there.
We need to take a break, and we'll be right back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
Three things keep Catholic Radio Indy on the air. One is our fervent desire to spread the gospel message. Two is your donations to the station. We couldn't survive without them. And three is underwriting from area businesses. Every month, these businesses make donations to the station. Please support them. Visit their stores, send them an email, or call them. Let them know that you appreciate their support of Catholic Radio. It's a great way to thank our underwriters for their very important support.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy. This is an encore presentation of the Catholic Cave.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, here with Timothy O'Donnell, Kent Blanford, and we are talking about fasting. Very fitting topic for Lent. We're talking about fasting, self-denial.
A moment too soon, too, based on how my belt fit this morning, I might add.
Yeah, and right before the break, You were bringing up this idea of sort of the incommensurability. It's a big word, incommensurability.
Thank goodness we don't have to spell on the radio.
Right, of different ethical systems and different ethical viewpoints and how, to a certain extent, we've lost the ability to communicate back and forth. And so something symbolic, like fasting, like giving something up, it's almost a sense of rebellion and a sense of protest against what society should be expecting of us. It becomes countercultural.
Yeah, and it becomes a sphere from which we can push back. Yeah.
You know, Catholicism isn't the only religion that fasts. As I said before, you know, fasting's kind of a universal thing. You know, Islam, there's the fast for Ramadan. You know, Judaism, there's fasts. Nietzsche. Friedrich Nietzsche, the great whipping boy here, and also I think the guy that first recognized this idea that you're going to wind up with just sort of incommensurable, combative outlooks on things, and one perspective is as good as another perspective, and basically whoever wins is the one who wields the biggest hammer.
The will to power.
The will to power.
Yes.
He was a big advocate of fasting, of self-denial, of you know, trying to strengthen yourself by honing your will and your intellect so that you can go out and get whatever it is that you're directed at getting. How is it that Catholic fasting is sort of different, I guess, than this other type of self-denial that's big in our culture too? I mean, if you turn on late night television, which I'm not these days during Lent, but if you turn on, you know, you'll see advertisements for the latest exercise workout and for the latest dieting fad. And really a lot of this all revolves around denying yourself, self-denial, so that you can be a better version of you. How does that differ from what we're trying to accomplish in Lent with our fasting?
Well, I would say there could be overlap. There could be, and the different that where we would look to make a distinction, Mark, I think, is diet and exercise obviously are good. They're good for the human being. They're good for us physically and emotionally. But it's whether or not that if they become ends in and of themselves, I think, is where the problem may lie. If for Catholics, what we have to remember is that everything ought to lead or point towards our ultimate destination, our ultimate good, which is the beatific vision, right? That everything has to lead back to the most holy Trinity and everything we take on, whether through our discipline, through our obedience, our self-sacrifice, is to be united with our Lord. And our Lord in what way? When we think of like placing our trust in Jesus, that great prayer that St. Faustina through her diary, the Divine Mercy chapter, Jesus, I trust in you. When we place our trust in Jesus, what we're trying to do is we're trying to do three things. One, we're trying to obey his commands. He gave us commands. We're also trying to do what? Believe what he believes. He had a certain beliefs and doctrines, and so we're to follow those. And then also, when we think about placing our trust in Jesus, we're also trying to imitate him in his virtues and do what Jesus did. Everything our Lord did is worthy of our imitation, including, and maybe most importantly, his suffering. We cannot escape in the human condition. We cannot escape suffering. And sacrifice prepares us. This fasting is a way to unite ourselves with Christ, who is our ultimate good. That's different from perhaps a diet and exercise routine where the end or the only end is a kind of power that I gain over myself.
Right. You know, the point of Christian life, we talked about this at the beginning of the show. If you see that split between, you know, we were created in the image and likeness of God and we've lost that likeness through sin, you know, we've fallen away from being Christ-like and we've fallen away from being God.
Disfigured ourselves. Yeah.
And so the point, to a certain extent, of sanctification is to bring us back towards the likeness of God. We have to be able to fixate on God to do that. You know, we have to be able to kind of imitate, as you said, the goodness of Christ. We have to imitate the truth of Christ, and we have to imitate sort of the beauty that we see. So we have to focus in on those transcendentals, the true, the good, and the beautiful that we say are coextensive with God.
I think one of the things that we've talked about here is the will. And we have a will that we can either focus on our appetites, our desires, or I think, you know, in order to become more in the image and likeness of God, we need to follow those four words from the Lord's Prayer, "Thy will be done." It's a simple matter of, can we subjugate our will to His will?
You know, that's a constant struggle during prayer, of forgetting your own will, trying to quiet your own voices, trying to quiet so that you can listen, so that you can hear and discern what God's will is. It really is an act of self-denial in itself, of submitting yourself to the will of God in prayer, and then, you know, trying to follow that out in your lifetime. It's that sort of subjugation of the will that fasting really helps us by kind of in little ways training us towards.
Yeah, that's so important that you guys brought that up, because remember, God is wisdom itself, and divine wisdom. And divine wisdom will always be the surest path to happiness. And wisdom, doing God's will serves as a corrective to the errors of our day. And so by following God's will, that doesn't mean that we won't suffer, that we won't face adversity. In fact, we know we will. In fact, the more we become like Christ, the more likely we are to suffer as He suffered, which is a great grace. This is why some saints have been given the great grace of the stigmata, right? So think of how countercultural it is. So St. Francis of Assisi, for example, to receive the stigmata. Who? St. Pio of Petrolina, right? I always pronounce that wrong, I think, but Padre Pio, right?
Right.
And who also received at a very young age, 18 years old or something. So how is it that, I mean, think how counter that is to our culture that is fixated on the young and the beautiful, the fast, the glamorous, what I mean? Compared to someone who takes up a religious habit, let's say, and how countercultural that is. I mean, part of the way of religious life is through a self-mastery, a discipline that what unites them even as closely as possible to our Lord. We use nuptial terms, right, for vowed religious. They're the brides of Christ, right, when you think of religious nuns and sisters. So they're very powerful images, and that's, you know, Christ is the bridegroom, the church, His bride. And so we want to think about in those terms. That's very different when we're engaged in fasting and prayer and almsgiving than what the world would present to us, which it seems to often strongly encourage and tempt us. No, what you really ought to be doing is just satisfy whatever desire you have. Who am I to judge?
Right.
And then do what you need to do to get your desire satisfied. And if you stand in my way, I'm going to use language and other means to get you out of my way.
And even when there is self-denial within that sort of worldly Nietzschean vision of things, that self-denial is really just deferred gratification. It's not really an entire denial of the passions. It is a deferment so that we can later and with more vigor and more strongly be able to go after, you know, so whatever kills me makes me, whatever doesn't kill me makes me stronger. That sort of ethos of, I'm going to have self-denial so that I can be a stronger, better, more assertive person that can much more easily get what I want down the road.
Yeah, that's a problem. I think instead what a way for us to think about these, say the inevitable daily trials and tribulations that we face and the failings that we experience moment to moment throughout the day, you know, those should serve as Catholics as reminders of our frailty, that our souls are frail, and that we need God's grace to build on our nature,
right,
to what? Give us the strength to overcome our shortcomings, our failings, when our wills are weak and we give into temptation, sinful temptation, and that we should use those as occasions of humility to acknowledge our dependence on God, that we can't do it without His grace, to pick ourselves back up and rejoin the fight, right, after an act of contrition, and move forward, right? And then, of course, we have what? The great grace of what? The sacrament of penance, right? Where should we have the occasion of mortal sin, we have a remedy, right? We have access to the good physician.
I think you bring up a good point that you can't look at the sacrifices of Lent and the self-denial that goes along with it without looking at what we're supposed to be refilling ourselves with, mm-hmm. which is the grace of Christ. So, you know, if you go back to that sort of tripart vision of the soul that St. Augustine laid out for us that we talked about earlier of memory, intellect, and will. And, you know, the contents of those are all one and the same. There's nothing that you can remember that you didn't first desire to know. And there's nothing that you learned that you didn't have the first desire to learn it. There's nothing that you can remember that you hadn't already learned. All of that plays together, but purging ourselves to a certain extent, purging our souls of those objects that are unworthy of our memory, our intellect, and our will, so that we can fill them up with what God gives us, and so that we can be more directed towards God by allowing our souls to a certain extent be purged and then filled back up by what's holy, what's good, what's righteous, what's beautiful. That's really kind of the whole purpose behind our fasting.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that is such a that can be such an important distinction in the Catholic philosophical and theological tradition. Going back to the term we used earlier, deification. In a lot of non-Catholic Christian circles, there's this understanding that God simply declares us righteous in His sight, or declares us just, right? That we're really, I think it was Luther who said, we're piles of dung, and Christ is the sort of the snow or garment that hides our ugliness from the Father by virtue of the work of His redeeming act on the cross and resurrection. Where Catholics do not see it that way.
No.
We might start off as dunghills,
you know? But we actually believe we are actually transformed. We are
correct.
Actually, you know, God became man.
He builds us up.
Right. God became man so that man might become like God.
Right.
And it's through that process of losing, to a certain extent, what we desire and training ourselves that God is then able to transform us and bring us closer to Him.
So I want to mention real quick, because I know we're going to run out of time here before too long. So we talked about will. We talked about how in this discipline of fasting, it's going to be an occasion in which we're going to subordinate or subjugate our own wills to God's will. I hear a lot of times people say, well, how do I know what God's will is for me? And I will just throw out there a few things. I want to hear what you guys have to say. I think how we can know what God's will is for us is, one, you can look at the Catechism of the Catholic Church. There are the teachings. God calls us to follow His commandments. He calls us to live a life of love, to imitate Him and His virtues. The Beatitudes, there's sacred scripture, and reading, for example, during Lent, a great spiritual exercise is to read the Gospels. And then also, I'll say, it's through prayer. It's our time, and it's the time that we spend with Him, especially in adoration, going to Mass, as Kent is doing, going to extra Mass each week now during Lent to spend time to worship, adore, but also so that we can hear God's quiet voice.
Right. And, you know, fasting plays such an important part in the role of us being able to discern God's will through prayer, because as we tune ourselves into our will a little bit more, we're able to perceive when what we desire is what God desires while we're praying, and what we desire isn't what God desires.
Right.
Being able to perceive that too. You know, Ignatius talks about going through periods of desolation and consolation and paying attention to those in our prayer life. You only are able to do that if you can discipline yourself through fasting.
And that is all the time we have for the Catholic Eve this week. And until next time, may God bless.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of The Catholic Cave. If you have a question or comment regarding this program, please address an email to Kent, K-E-N-T, at CatholicRadioIndy.org or call 317-870-8400. Replays of this program are available on podcast at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Just click on the programming tab, then go to podcasts of local programs.
If it wasn't for you all, I don't know what I would do.
Catholic Radio Indy.
What an absolute blessing you are.